Anyways, my name is Alex Casanova. I'm with the Division of eHealth Marketing. I'm going to be talking today about online video, some of the trends, where it's come from, where it's heading to, and what we're doing at the CDC with it. I'm the type of person that actually believes that before you start really jumping into a technology, you should really look at where it came from. So I'm going to go do a brief little overview of where online videos come from, and then I'll expand on it from there. First of all, this is a really interesting quote that I found a while back, but it says YouTube now contains hundreds of millions of videos with an average of 8 hours of content being uploaded every minute. So, you know, I started wondering, like, you know, how big is that number? So I went out and I found that Nielsen Press said that there's an average of about 4.5 minutes of TV or basically online video watched a day. So again, I just started running a few numbers here, and basically what it broke down to is that if you were to actually try viewing everything that was uploaded in a 24-hour period, it would take you about 7 years to do. Just some staggering numbers, and I think that's why we are looking at this particular channel here. If you look at video itself, online video has been around for quite some time. As a matter of fact, it actually debuted back in 1956. AT&T built the first picture phone. They actually built it, were developing it up until 1964, where they went ahead and debuted it to the public during the World's Fair up in New York. Some of the comments that people had, well, a lot of people actually didn't like it. They didn't like to be seen on here. Also, too, they thought it was quite bulky. I mean, if you do look at the desk here, this gentleman's desk, you can see it is a pretty good-sized piece of machinery here. So in 1970, they re-released it, and again, it just really didn't take off, mainly because of the price here. As you can see, they were in 1970, they wanted a subscription fee of about $160 a month, which today, that's a little bit more, you know, a little bit higher than average in regards to some of your data plans. But back then, you can see the average income was around a little less than $10,000, so this would be quite expensive. So there weren't too many people that were able to get this. Again, even the cost of gas was 36 cents a gallon, which is mind-boggling nowadays. But so, you know, it just really didn't take off. So. But they still kept on playing with it. Ericsson, as a matter of fact, actually with their units across the Atlantic itself, started doing a lot of testing back and forth. And then we had ARPA, who, I don't know if you guys are familiar with ARPA, they're basically the guys who sort of came up with the internet. Well, they defined basically the FTP protocol, as well as they actually started experimenting with video packets. And again, if you look down here, there's a few other ones in here that are really interesting. You see Mitsubishi actually sold their first picture phone. And then 2 years later, they stopped selling picture phones. So it's interesting when you start looking back at the history, how things have actually come and gone, and they're like, oh, no, it's not going to work nowadays. But as technology advances, we start seeing a lot of this old technology being re-released. We see MPEG-4 standard was released back in 1999. Yes, it's been around for 9 years now. And then, of course, in 2005, we had, you know, three former PayPal employees come up with this company called YouTube, or this product. So now, in order for us to do some of the stuff we're doing, we really wanted to actually find a lot of information. So what I did is I went out and I found some pretty relative information in regards to how people are using online videos. And so there was this one particular study that was actually done that was basically conducted by Princeton Survey Research. And they used a total of 1,492 users, and they just randomly picked them out of the phone book and just started calling them at different times of the day. And you can see that basically what they came up with was with that number, there was a total, well, there were 74% of those users were actually broadband users. So that was a number that was a little bit higher than what we expected. And then you can actually see the age groups here. We had basically 76% of adults watched or downloaded videos, while only 31% of them watched or downloaded them daily. Again, that's a pretty high number in regards to who's doing what for 18 and 29-year-olds. We broke them down also. As you can see, you'll have the 50 to 64-year-olds, 46% of them are watching or downloading video, while 12% of them are only doing it daily. And this is where they were, or what they were looking at. So you found that a lot of your 18 to 29-year-olds, the number one thing they were looking at was basically online was comedy-related topics. Then, of course, followed by music as well as news. Whereas adults that were 30-plus, 37% of them were actually, you know, looking at news, and then it broke down to comedy, 31. And then it topped out with music and education being both at 22%. So this is actually breaking it down even a little bit further. Again, these are all the different categories. Most of these categories, if you go onto YouTube, you'll see that you can browse by these. Again, there's sports, there's educational, animation, et cetera, et cetera. But you can see that the number one category, again, is comedy, followed by news with 18 to 29-year-olds. So that's, again, a pretty startling number. I don't know too many 18 or 19-year-olds that are actually really that interested in news nowadays, but that number was much, much higher than we thought it was going to be. In regards to female versus male download, again, sports probably being the one that not too many people would think that there would be more females watching than males, but then of course we have the news, which was 42 to 32%, followed by comedies and music. Now, when we start looking again at some of the other demographics, you'll see that was, which was another surprising number, was over here, who's watching the videos online, the total household income. This is pretty even here. So there really was no difference between those making 30,000 to 50,000 all the way up. Again, there was pretty similar numbers between those who have some college education as well as those who are college graduates. Something that I found interesting as well was that 62% of all viewers prefer professional videos. I would have thought that would have been a little bit higher. But again, it's with the popularity of YouTube and you know, people just like seeing silly things. That number sort of makes sense in there. So there was another survey that was actually pulled. And this one actually spanned, what they did is they wanted to compare some data between the end of the 2006 and the beginning of 2007. They had 500 participants, all that were 18 and older. And they were measuring click-throughs as well as the completion rates for videos. And so we can actually see that of those 500, 69% of those that were 35 years and older were actually viewing content online, whereas only 31% of those 18 to 34 were actually watching it. And again, this is the whole way through. This is not just starting it. This is watching it the whole way through. Where'd you typically stream the content at or watch it from? Home. That was the number one, that's 95%. Now a lot of people are actually having YouTube blocked out or locked out of their businesses, so this sort of made sense. But again, it's followed by work at 4% and schools and universities at 1%. Now, just so you know too, schools and universities, you did have a lot of students that considered home their schools, so that's why the number's a little bit higher than what you would think. Now, what are the different types of content that you are most likely to stream? And what you see here in green is basically what they're comparing it to the orange. So the green is actually the first half of 2007, whereas the orange is the second half of 2006. And again, what's surprising is watching some of these numbers where news and clips are much higher than they were previously, the previous 6 months. Whereas if you look at music videos, they've actually flip-flopped. So this has been really, really interesting. So again, what we're trying to do is just see where everybody's going or how we can tailor this this material onto different social sites. So if you look at the streaming activities by age, you can see some of the things that were actually happening here. For instance, on the charts on the left, or again, these are 18 to 34-year-olds. The very first numbers that we see over here, 47% of the people that were watching the videos in the first half of 2007 actually forwarded this clip onto a friend so that you know others can actually to watch it with them. You had 15% who were creating the videos. Well, that number actually dropped by 1% over a six-month period. This number was, again, really fascinating, was that a lot of people now are starting to refer back to the internet when they miss an episode, so it just lost whatever. You missed it last night, well, why not get back online and watch it? So there's different delivery methods when you actually start talking about online video. We have the progressive media as well as we have streaming media. Now, your traditional server is usually a progressive server. A streaming server sort of makes sense. It's for streaming videos. Now, in regards to progressive servers themselves, at the CDC, you know, basically the CDC approved server or player itself are real Windows Media and Flash, which is the same servers or same players that are approved for the streaming media server itself. Now the big difference is that when you actually deliver something or you click on a link from a progressive server, what will happen, you'll notice that sometimes you start playing and it all of a sudden stops and says buffering, or basically you can't forward it. That's the progressive server. So this is why they came out with streaming servers, because what it does, it quickly just sends you a packet and it's analyzing and saying, okay, you have a pipe this big and you were trying to get that much information, so I'm going to keep on sending you little packets, and it's constantly sending them. Whereas, again, with a progressive, it's trying to send everything at once, a big, big bulk server itself. So when we start looking at the advantages and disadvantages of the progressive server versus a streaming server, you'll see here that the big one is the content is not downloadable usually on the streaming server. Again, that's usually. The content cannot be edited, nor can it be redistributed. The downfall to it, again, is in this case, when we start talking about podcast itself, a stream cannot necessarily be sent to an iPod yet. In the future, who knows, but right now, no. Both of them are actually protected by copyright laws. Unfortunately, you cannot track a progressive video file, because again, you're downloading it to your system and then you're dispersing it from there. Whereas if you're putting it from a streaming server, you can't save it, but you're able to track who's viewing it, how many times they're viewing it, etc. So if we start looking at some of the other health sites that are using different types of videos, again, we have video podcasts. This is how we broke it out. We have video podcasts on the left, as well as we have online videos on the right. You'll see that WebMD's, Healthology's, About.com, and the Mayo Clinic both have online video. So these, again, are intended to be watched online, not on a podcast. Whereas NASA, NIH, FDA, as well as the USDA and CDC both have podcast and online video capabilities. So back on August 4th, we launched what is called CDC TV. CDC TV basically, we launched it with a series that's called Health Matters. Now, the purpose of this was to deliver short, high-quality videos, and we wanted to be able to allow the users to come in here and actually download them, or even embed them into their own blogs, or even go ahead and put them onto their podcast. We started with 6 different videos. The Break the Silence was the first one that premiered, that is coming from the Health Matters. It's 1 of 5. The second one should be releasing within the next 3 weeks. There was also a 4-part children's book, as well as a error preparedness video that was talking about what CDC is doing in the future. Now, if you look at the actual site itself, the first thing we see here is when you come in here is the actual video. Just so you know, it is 508 compliant, which is the first thing that we look at in here. Not only is the video 508 compliant, meaning captions, it is tab accessible, and screen readers do read this. Which, if you look at Windows Media Player, QuickTime Player, Real Player, none of those are tab accessible. So this is one of the few that are fully accessible out there. On the right side here, we have embedding code, so you can embed this into different blogs if you want to. As well as here's all the different formats you can actually download. We have different downloads, everything from a small format, so some phones now will allow you to read a Windows media file, so you can actually download this video to your telephone, all the way up to a high resolution, which is the high resolution file itself right here was pretty much geared for people being able to embed this into their presentations, not necessarily on video on TV. So last Friday, we ran some numbers, and we'll see here that the CDC TV landing page itself has had a total of 9,216 page visits, of which 3,600 videos were viewed. And of those, 360 of those videos were downloaded. The number one video is the Break the Silence video, which does take up about 70% of that number. If we, one of the other things we were curious to see was actually how people were watching this video. How much of the video were they watching? So we went ahead and embedded some code in here so that we knew that to actually send us some information when they hit play. So you see here we had over 2,500 people hit play. And then when it actually goes to the midpoint of the video, again, it sent us some numbers saying, hey, they're halfway through this. And then once it finished, which this number is usually about 5 seconds before the end of the video, it would send us some more information saying that this person has watched the video itself. So you can see that basically 1/3 of the people who actually started the video actually watched it the whole way through. And again, this is only a 6-minute video, so which is a little bit higher than what you normally would want to have on a site, but the numbers are actually pretty good. We're also receiving different comments from people who are visiting the site itself. Everything to people wanting to actually have a button that they can actually make it full screen, which is great. That's going to be probably in version 2. My favorite one is the one that's down here at the very bottom. So I think the quality is great, and I'm putting them up on my YouTube channel. So, which leads me to social video sites. As you can see, there are a lot of social video sites out there. This Actually, there's probably a few more that I'm missing in here, but these are the big ones. With YouTube obviously being buried right in the middle. And if we start looking at them, the whole landscape of actual social media sites, you can see that YouTube, and again, this is in comparison, the size of the sphere is in comparison to one another. YouTube is actually the biggest one when we start looking at different social sites. It was estimated that YouTube itself last month had 73.2 million visitors, so that's a pretty large number. Now, we do have a YouTube channel. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that, a YouTube user channel. It's not a true channel. We're in the process of actually finalizing this with other agencies on how we can actually cross-promote a lot of our videos, not only on the CDC website, but also on YouTube, and be pushing them back and forth. So you can see here, this particular video, it is pointing everybody back to the CDC website for more information. Now, what's great about YouTube also is that they also provide some demographics on your videos. So you can actually come back in here and you can say from what date, from this date to that date, how many people viewed it, you know, male or female, where did they view it from. You can even nail it down into what state they're viewing it from. And it actually breaks it out, again, video by video, or in this case, all the videos that we had available on YouTube. We've also taken that video that's up on YouTube and went ahead and actually buried it into our MySpace page. So again, this is the whole syndication thing that we were talking about earlier, how we can place it on one place and just go ahead and populate it out from there. Now, we start looking at the technology again. The video itself, iPods is just one piece of the pie here. I mean, again, it's, and yeah, we started with, as Fred stated earlier, we started with iPods, 3 years ago, 2 years ago at CDC. But the numbers have just greatly grown from there. And now we're even looking into the iTouch as well. So there's just different mediums that we're looking at jumping into when it comes to online video. Now, the other medium we're looking at as well is mobile devices. And again, there's some staggering numbers here. 3.3 billion users of mobile phones were worldwide. Hong Kong itself actually had a penetration rate of 138%, so that obviously that meant that multiple people had multiple phones. And then India is actually adding 6 million phones a month. So this is, it's insane the number, or how quickly this technology is actually growing. Now we start looking at video technology on phones itself. We have everything from 3GPP to MPEG-4, RTSP, as well as flashlight. Flashlight being the latest format itself, which is obviously built on Adobe Flash technology. You do have what they call Mobi shows, which are quick little shows that are being streamed to your telephone. And one of these shows, an example of that would be ESPN Sports Center. So some of the other things that we have been actually doing on phones itself was we did a personalized project with a group of students from UGA where they actually went out and they basically videotaped and developed a PPSA or a PSA, excuse me, based off video that was being recorded on their cell phone. So they did a few little interviews. They sent everything back to their hotel room because this is all done in Philadelphia. Then from there they edited it, and the following day they actually had this stuff online. So it was really neat too because they were actually they were judged, and everything was pretty much up and live for World AIDS Day, which was at that time, which was last December. I would show you the video here, but unfortunately, we're not getting a link out, so I can't show you what they did. But it's, I would definitely suggest going and looking at this, because it's really impressive what you're able to do with a phone and video. So if we start looking at the future, where online video is going, you're starting to see two major players here. Microsoft with their new Silverlight technology and Adobe Flash. Ever since Adobe's bought Macromedia, you're starting to see that they're really putting a big push into Flash and online video technology. What you're starting to see is, you know, a lot of stuff, a lot of people want to actually take video online, so you can actually go ahead and personalize your on-demand experience. You want to be able to add basically ads or any kind of news-related information to a video. You can make objects hot on a video. So for instance, if somebody's wearing a specific sports jacket, you can actually have information on the right side of your screen on top of your video that actually, will, by clicking on it, will give you information about that sports jacket. So you can make a really interactive experience with online video. As a matter of fact, if you went to MSN.com, you'll see that the Olympics itself was actually being streamed using Microsoft Silverlight technology. What was really, really neat about it was that you can actually customize your player. So when you went into the actual program itself, Let me back up some too, just so you guys know, Silverlight is did come out 2 years ago. This is release two that was just released. You will basically see the plugin being available on the next dot release of Internet Explorer. So whatever, was it 7.1 or is it 8? Or eight, either or, whenever it comes out, you'll see that now you will not now need to download that plugin. But you can customize the actual interface itself. So for instance, when you went to the page, you had four blank menus up in here. So just by clicking on it and telling it, for instance, I wanted this movie to be item one, it would actually place it here. And so, and these are all live streams. They had four live simultaneous streams being viewed here. Now, to give you an idea, I was actually viewing this on a laptop with a wireless card. And it was playing back at around 24 frames a second, which, just so you know, TV is usually about 30 frames a second. So it's pretty impressive what you're getting. But at any time, you can actually click on any one of these videos and it'll blow it up full screen, or you can actually click on this video and tell it to swap it, or click on this one and it'll blow that one up full screen. And this is what it'll look like. Now, what's neat about this too is that you can actually, again, come back in here, and you can see it's customized right now. I mean, it's telling you what it is up in here, and all these player controls are on top of the actual live video source. A little hard to see there, but it's somewhat opaque. So you can quickly share it, you can make comments on it, or you can leave it as a standalone player, so you can actually, you know, shut down a browser and have it up there by itself. These are some of the numbers that NBC had just released last Tuesday. if you look at these numbers, again, they're broken down. We have mobile and we have online, because with Silverlight, they're also streaming it to cell phones. But you can see, for instance, the first day of opening ceremonies, they had over 4 million viewers viewing it online. And this number, I haven't seen it, but I heard it has grown exponentially again over the past, since yesterday. But you can see how it's greatly increased from 4.2 million up to 7.7 million over a 5-day period online itself. Now, what's interesting too is that there was another article I was reading this morning that Yahoo was streaming the same videos using the same technology on their website, and they actually had 62% of the viewers. So they were, and so again, if you look at these numbers, you could pretty much more than double them and get a pretty good feel of how many people are actually watching this online. And if you compare these numbers again back to the Athens Olympics 4 years ago, you can see that it is a 705% increase of viewers that are watching us online. So you can see where the future is going here. Now, Adobe itself, again, as I said, Adobe is making tremendous strides in regards to, and they're really trying to gut into this market more and more when it comes to video itself. The way they're looking at it is, what's neat about the Adobe Flash Player is that, again, yes, you can stream Flash now with different codecs. You have everything from H.264, if you've heard of Blu-ray DVDs, well, Blu-ray DVD is actually usually encoded with an H.264 codec, which now the Adobe Flash Player reads by default. So you do not need to download anything specific to get a DVD quality stream to your computer itself. Now, Adobe is also saying that their plugin is actually installed in 99% of all computers that are plugged up to the internet. So that's a pretty vast number itself. Now, on the left side down here of this chart, you'll see that where the actual technology was. And what we're seeing here, the big thing is, you can see that back in 2005, the dominant color here was based off TV distribution. Then the next big one here was films itself. So what they're saying is that basically in the future, well, which their future is within the next 2 to 3 years, 2011, excuse me, that you can see that the broadcast media itself is probably gonna be the greatest watched component in here. Now, again, if you start reading these numbers, you'll be floored on how many people actually have the Flash Player installed. Keep in mind, too, these numbers were presented by Adobe, so they might be slightly skewed. So, so if you look at Adobe, too, what they did is they released their new media player, which is really neat because, again, they've gone out and they've actually talked to different groups, different folks, everybody from the Food Network, Comedy Channel, MTV, as well as they talked to CBS. So everything from 60 Minutes, The Nova Show, CSI, all these things are online. So you can just go and download this particular player itself and get some brief information on what you're about to see. So what you see here is we have different tabs and different categories, everything from comedy all the way up to drama, news, etc. So by clicking on any one of these, we'll bring them up. And again, you have the ability of actually just viewing it here. Here's your standard controls. But you can actually have overlaid material. So if you want to know more about this particular site here, which was the Merced River. I forgot where that is. Let's see here. Yosemite Valley is what it's saying here. But they actually have areas in here where it's hot. You can actually get them to, just by clicking on the video, it'll bring up a menu that you fill out, you know, to subscribe to get more information about Yosemite. So again, it's that whole interactivity in here. Lastly, again, when you start looking at 508, this is it's a mandate that needs to be done here. And one of the big things that we've been looking at the CDC and playing with is we're having to make sure that everything is produced at the CDC is 508 compliant. Again, when we say 508, it's just not closed captions. It is the accessibility through the keyboard, through screen readers. So we're having to test this through here. And that's it. Questions for any one of us? All right. Did have a question.
Currently, we have a page at www.cdc.gov/widgets that lists our the current widgets in production, as well as quick links to embed on that on an iGoogle page or the embed code. We hope to as we get more widgets online, we hope to expand the help section of that and explain more how to more easily embed these widgets in your own blog page. We don't rely on JavaScript. The contents indication Scott was talking about, the full page contents indication does rely on JavaScript. That we don't have, since that project is still in pilot phase, we don't have a page out there on our website to explain more about it. But if you're interested in that, or you know someone who's interested about it, please talk to us. Other questions? Everybody awake?
What you mentioned in the first talk about MOUs needing to be there for some content, is that process worldwide, and what kind of content is that?
So the MOU was not specific to the content syndication with Caring Bridge. We were doing an MOU with Caring Bridge, and one of the activities that we happened to be doing was the content syndication. And so with the MOU, they were able to use the logo on their site, whereas the regular content syndication, like if you look at Ohio State website, the page sample that we have with them, our logo isn't displayed. We have a text byline saying that the content is provided by the Centers for Disease Control, but we're not branding it with our logo. So in terms of how we've been working with the state health departments and public health partners of that nature, we aren't requiring an official MOU at this point. As we blow this out and try to create a more generic API that's available to everyone, we will have to look at putting terms of service into place. But right now, since we're just piloting with predominantly public health departments, we're not requiring MOUs for those.